The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. There was someone on this show, I'm forgetting who it was, someone, it's the Max Kellerman Show with me. Oh yeah, I'm sitting here by myself. Someone on this show.
It was you!
That the Bears would beat the Bucks. And my reasoning went as follows. First of all, Nick Foles is now the quarterback of the Bears. Nick Foles, given the right coaching, most players are very dependent upon coaching. Very few would be, you know, great no matter who's their coach. Nick Foles, when Chip Kelly was there, 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Then he goes to Jeff Fisher, he's no good. Then he goes back to the Eagles, he has Doug Peterson and his quarterback's coach, John DeFilippo, and he wins the Super Bowl. Then he goes to Jacksonville, no good. He gets hurt, clavicle. Now he's in Chicago. Guess who's his quarterback coach? John DeFilippo. By the way, check out how Carson Wentz is doing. Not so good, is he, without his quarterback's coach? Nick Foles, same old Nick Foles. That is to say, he's an average quarterback who's huge in big moments. You can win a Super Bowl that way. Eli Manning won 2. League average quarterback normally, maybe a tick above for Eli, but when it mattered most, all-time great. Nick Foles is not an Iron Man like Eli Manning, but I've seen him elevate under pressure consistently, given the right coach. Now, the Bucs had to travel to Chicago. You got to go to Soldier Field. The Bucs had some injuries. The Bucs had to come back on the Falcons, all the way back. I like the Bears straight up in the upset, and that's exactly what happened. Now, why did it happen? Nick Foles began that game. Just, he was awful. He was awful. But he got better and better as the game went on. And by the end of the game, when they needed him most, when you saw he needs a couple yards to get in field goal range, right? Try and win this thing. He threw a beautiful pass. And by the way, Nagy, the Bears head coach, mismanaged the clock and gave Tom Brady over a minute to try and win. Oh, Tom Brady has all these weapons. He has Gronk, Mike Evans. I don't care who's hurt. He's got a lot of guys who are healthy, too. Tom Brady's going to lead this comeback. No, he didn't do anything. And Tom Brady, who earlier in that game chewed out his offensive line because, they lack discipline. Brady's finding out what the rest of the quarterbacks in the league deal with. This ain't a Belichick coach team where it's always the other team that's beating themselves, never the Patriots. And Brady got a lot of that credit. This is how the other 31 teams live. His offensive line had him doing the moonwalk down the wrong way, up the field or down the field instead of up. And he chewed them out publicly. And I thought at the time, they kind of deserve it. But see, Tom? Ain't the same when you're not with Belichick, is it? And then after chewing them out, which could either be for, it couldn't be execution, right? It had to be mental lapses because they keep getting penalized. Well, if you're going to chew them out publicly like that as their leader, how do you think they feel when you lose track of the downs at the end of the game? How's that for a mental lapse? Now, look, third down and especially fourth down, those were tough throws. But go ahead, do something like, you know, Aaron Rodgers makes throws like that all the time. Now, he's throwing to a lot of open receivers now. But when Aaron Rodgers needs to thread a needle, hit a guy on the back shoulder, the whole thing, he does it. Listen, Brady last year wasn't great. He was okay. And everyone said, oh, he doesn't have the weapons. But I saw him miss throws every way you can miss them. East, west, north, and south. So what happens when you get older. He basically tweeted at me, Tom Brady, last year when he hit 61 miles an hour on the radar gun, right? And he asked about Cliff, and he put it on social media. It was directed at me. And I thought, yeah, man, you could still muscle it. But when you hit 61, can you do it not just with precision on a given throw, but consistently, precisely? That's real accuracy. It's not able to thread the needle on one throw in a game. It's can you consistently thread that needle when you got mustard on the ball? And the answer for Brady is no, he can't. He has not demonstrated the ability to do that in several years. Because as you get older and your physical tools dissipate, in order to get that velocity, you got to put a little more on it. You lose a little accuracy. It's a game of inches. And Brady had to make some perfect throws, which he failed to make on that final drive. Not the end of the world, but boy, when you hold up a four, meaning you forgot what down it was at the end of the game, it's a bad look after you chewed out your offensive line. Worse than that, though, to me, because that could happen to anyone. So you don't make two perfect throws after you had a great, Brady had a great comeback against the Falcons the week before. You're at Soldier Field. You're playing a very good defense. You're playing a quarterback who's very good under pressure in Nick Foles. Got a good coach, the whole thing. I mean, I'll get to that in a second, but you don't have to win every game. Brady can lose. That's the kind of game you're going to lose. In fact, that's why I picked the Bears in the upset. No big deal. But just admit that you you got confused. Great baseball players will nevertheless sometimes forget how many outs there are in an inning. Right? They tag up or don't tag up when they're supposed to or they're not supposed to. Great basketball players may call a timeout and they don't have any timeouts. And it costs their team. It happens. But why didn't Brady just cop to that? Here's Bruce Arians after the game, Brady's head coach, on Brady not realizing it was fourth down. Here's how Bruce Arians responded. Here's the question, too, and then his response.
Bruce, at the end of the game there, that last drive, it looked like Tom might have been confused with what down it was. Did he not know it was fourth down?
Yeah, he knew. He knew.
That's coach covering for Tom Brady. Remember when coach publicly aired Tom Brady out early? That was one thing. But now he has his players back. When he needed to use Tom Brady as an example to show the team everyone has to get in line, he did it. And I'm sure Tom Brady was with that. And when he needed to have his quarterbacks back, he got his quarterbacks back. Gotta like that if you're Tom Brady. But Tom Brady was asked the question on not realizing it was fourth down. Listen to the question. Listen to Tom Brady's answer.
The final play, they may mention that maybe you didn't know it was fourth down. I can't imagine that was the case. What was, it was fourth and five. You took a shot there. Great.
I knew we needed a chunk, and I was thinking about more yardage. And then, it was bad execution. And we had a great opportunity there, so just didn't execute when we needed to.
Let me tell you, if I were there, what I would have asked, okay? If I were there, I would have asked, Tom, did you know it was fourth down? And if he says yes, I would ask him, why did you hold up four? But the point is, without being asked that directly, he was evasive in his answer. He said, I was thinking chunk yards and I should have been thinking first down. Tom, you know why you're being asked. And you purposely didn't say, I didn't know it was fourth down, which clearly you did not know. It's one thing. Now, maybe Brady doesn't want to make a liar out of the coach, right? It could be. It seems more like he was embarrassed by not knowing, and he was being evasive as a result. And especially when you chewed out your O-line earlier in the game, not great. By the way, it's tough to go to Soldier Field and win. In fact, a couple years ago, go back 3 years, and the Eagles beat postseasons. And the Eagles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Carson Wentz, through however many weeks, was the MVP of the league, 13, 14 weeks. And then he gets hurt, and Nick Foles takes over. And I'm like, okay, now they're dead in the water. Nothing against Nick Foles. I think he's a good quarterback. I thought he was an excellent quarterback at Arizona. As I said, when he's had coaching in the NFL, he's been a solid quarterback and great under pressure. Meaning the bigger the moment, the more you can rely on him. And I remember thinking, but then Nick Foles went on a run, unbelievable, and won Super Bowl MVP in a game in which Tom Brady threw for 500 yards and the Patriots never punted once. Nick Foles won Super Bowl MVP and deserved it. He's catching passes. He's throwing passes. He's doing whatever you need him to do. Remember when Belichick was criticized? Who's the cornerback? I'm thinking. I can't remember. I've got too many names floating around my head, Raj. Who he didn't play in in the Super Bowl and pivot hardly at all.
Yeah, he barely played any plays, and he was off the team after that. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm brain freezing like Tom Brady on fourth down. Anyway, Belichick is defensive coordinator, and this is not my original idea. I wish I could remember who to attribute all these things to, but again, through the years, you read and see and hear a lot of stuff. Even earlier in the day, I can't always remember who said what, but I'd like to attribute it to the proper person. I want to say maybe it was in like For the Win, USA Today, For the Win. I wish I could remember the writer.
Wasn't it Malcolm Butler?
Malcolm Butler was the quarterback. Who mentioned Bill Belichick as defensive coordinator for the Giants wanted to dare the Bills to beat them with the run. So he put out defensive packages that encouraged them to run. And Thurman Thomas got big yards, and the Giants won the game. And here Belichick wanted Nick Foles to beat him with his arm. It's usually Belichick's MO, right? Belichick takes away the first and second best things you do and say, beat me with your third best thing. If you can do that, you win fair and square. That's why Manningham got that pass from Eli Manning in 2011, because Belichick's like, make Manningham. Matter of fact, there's audio of Belichick going, make Manningham beat us. Manningham beat him. And Eli beat him, and Bill Belichick can live with that. He gave, because he put the odds in his favor. Usually it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. So he dared Nick Foles to beat him, and Nick Foles did. That was in 2017. Then the following year, they have a Super Bowl title defense to make, and they're going nowhere. They're dead in the water. And Carson Wentz gets hurt again. He's regressed, and the team's not as good, and he gets hurt again. Nick Foles takes over under center and inspires that team, and they make the playoffs. And they're in the first round. They have to go to Chicago and play a Bears defense. Remember the Khalil Mack trade that happened earlier in the year, and this Bears defense was ferocious, and a lot of people, not one or two, a lot of people were taking the Bears to get out of the NFC. Nick Foles went to Soldier Field and beat him. I know Soldier Field is a tough place to play if the Bears have a good defense. Nick Foles did it, by the way, in the cold weather against a better Bears defense than this one. It's hard to do, but Foles did it. He's that kind of player. Then he went to New Orleans, almost beat the Saints. His receiver turns his head around. He maybe beats the Saints and Drew Brees. That's a hell of a way to go out, though. That's a Super Bowl title defense, even though you don't ultimately defend the title. Boy, that's the way you go out. That's no joke. Tom Brady couldn't get it done yesterday. He didn't play a bad game. He just couldn't get it done. He was penalized a lot. His offensive line wasn't good. But the fact of that, maybe he was covering for Arians, because Arians had already said, yeah, Brady knew the down. But he was asked a question, and he avoided answering it. He was evasive. And I think it's because he was embarrassed. 888-SAY-ESPN. That was a good football game for Thursday night, though. A one-point game. Tom Brady with the ball. Like, after Nick Foles and Tom Brady link up with two, I don't know if they're surprising teams, but two good teams. I picked both to finish second in their division. I thought the Packers would be better than the Bears. Well, maybe I picked the Bears to be third, but let's just pretend I said second just so it sounds good. I thought the Vikings would be better. Who knew Stefanski was such a big deal? And I thought the Bucs would finish behind the Saints. But boy, you get that on a Thursday night, a Super Bowl rematch of the quarterbacks, now on new teams. And it shakes out like that. Nick Foles makes the pass he has to make to put him in field goal range after an awful start. And they take the lead. But his coach mismanages the clock, and Brady has over a minute. And you're thinking, here it comes, and it doesn't. And Brady forgets the down. It's so hard. It's so hard when these games are on. It's 11 o'clock. Your adrenaline's pumping. Your heart's racing. And you're exhausted. You haven't slept enough by Thursday, you know? It's late in the week already. And how the hell do you go to sleep after that? I'm wired. I got to be up for at least another hour after that to get to sleep. That's why, Raj, eventually I will run on a platform of Wednesdays as a federal holiday. Because by Thursday, no one slept enough by Thursday night, right? But if you had if you increased the work day by 2 hours a day, so Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, you work 10 hours instead of 8. So those days all get a little worse in one way. But in another way, if people are up late on a Sunday, whatever, and they're like, oh, God, I shouldn't have been up late, and now I got this whole week extending before. It's murder. But instead, you have Wednesdays off. On Monday morning, you're just looking at, I got to get through today, and by the afternoon tomorrow, I'm good. I got Wednesday off.
But you know what that does for Tuesday, President Kellerman?
What's that?
Taco Tuesday!
Taco Tuesdays at a whole new level. It's at a whole new level. Now, Wednesday you have off, and then Thursday is, you know, like you're looking at the weekend. You got to work a little bit more Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, Friday, but I think it's well worth it. I would run on that, Raj, and here's the other thing.
What's that?
Daylight savings, done.
Forget about it.
How stupid is this that right when the weather's getting colder and the days are getting shorter anyway, you need to take another hour away?
Can't stand. Isn't that coming up later this month?
I don't even like to think about it. People are getting depressed all over the place. President Kellerman would take care of both those things, Raj.
Oh, I love it, Max. You got my vote, man.
888 say ESPN. LeBron and the Lakers can get banner number 17 tonight. And I want to make this clear. You should discount pre-modern championships. It doesn't mean they don't exist, but you discount them. So like in baseball, the Yankees have 27 championships, right? So much more than anyone else in any sport. It's embarrassing. But if you want to say, hey, pre-1947, the color line, you know, why do we keep count those as much? Okay, I'm with it. Pre-1961, expansion, going to 162 games. Why do we count those? Okay, I'm with it. Pre-1995, you know, meaning the wild card and everything. Okay, all right, I get it. You can discount Yankees championships in all those eras. The Yankees are still number one by a country mile. You want to measure championships since 1995 or 1961 or 1947? Yankees got it by a lot. No one's close. The Celtics used to be considered the Yankees of basketball because they had 13, you know, the NBA doesn't have as long a history as baseball. And when I was a kid, Celtics had 13 championships. Next closest with the Lakers, they had 6. Celtics had more than twice as much as anyone else. No one was ever going to catch them. And by the way, since then, the Celtics have tacked on 4 more. They got 17. But the Lakers have tacked on 10. They got 16. And when you start weighing more heavily the modern championships, meaning the absorption of the ABA teams, the adoption of the three-point shot, the Lakers clearly are the dominant franchise worldwide in the history of basketball. But once the Lakers are sitting on 17, the argument's over. Celtics fans do not have a leg to stand on. Look, Celtics fans, I know you're listening in Boston. You might be mad about that, but you know it's true. Like, as a Yankees fan, I'm real mad at Brian Cashman, who's an excellent GM. Excellent GM. But since 2005, the Red Sox have 4. The Yankees have 1. And while I don't insist the Yankees win the World Series every year, it's unrealistic, I absolutely insist they win it more than any other team. And certainly more than their chief rivals in their division. So I have to admit what's going on since 05. Why is Cashman the second-best GM in the division? Not good enough. Not good enough. Celtics fans got to be feeling the same way right now. Danny Ainge is excellent, but it ain't good enough right now, is it, Raj?
No, and you know I'm a Celtic fan. Disgusting. I was there you know, a little bit as a kid. Yeah, I know, but my childhood and my adulthood is filled with more sorrow watching the Lakers win than my Celtics. So as far as I'm concerned, the Lakers have more championships. I wasn't alive during the ones that we got, you know? So I saw 4. I don't even see 4 because I didn't see the first one. I was too young. So I'm
But it's
really
one thing. It's
3.
One thing. Like the Bird McHale Celtics got 3. The Magic Kareem Worthy Lakers got 5. Right. That's bad enough for Celtics fan. And a lot of that's because Bird's back went out. Right. So his career was not as long as Magic's. But since then, the Celtics have gotten 1. That was when they had a big 3, and there was no other big 3 in the league. Right. They had 3 Hall of Famers still playing at Hall of Fame level. No one else had that. And they got 1 out of that. And since the end of the Magic Kareem dynasty, the Lakers got 5 with Kobe. 3 with Shaq, 2 with Powell, 5 with Kobe. And now LeBron is sitting on his first one after tonight, if they can win tonight. That's 11, brother. That's 17 overall. That's the greatest franchise in the history of the known universe in basketball, period.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Reach me at 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Like Doug Kerizian. Kazarian. I apologize, Doug. ESPN Sports Betting Analyst. I'm talking too fast. Doug, if it makes you feel any better, I mispronounce my own last name all the time. Max Kellerman. It's a hard name to say. Kellerman. It's the R that messes you up. If I could say Kelman or something, but I got to say Kellerman. I screw it up all the time. Anyway, Doug Kazarian, ESPN Sports Betting Analyst, Daily Wager host, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. Doug, are you there?
I am. All good. I've been called a lot worse. And B, I screwed up on air too, man. I know it. It's like, you know, we know this. You put a mic on, you talk long enough on air, you're bound to say something wrong or stupid or something like that.
Yes, well, not me, but everyone else. That's true, Doug.
Right.
First time I've ever messed up anything in my life. You know, it's one thing to demand perfection of those around you if you, in fact, yourself aren't perfect. But in my case, Raj, I must demand perfection. All right, here we go, Doug. The 4-0 Bills at the 3-0 Titans, who I believe should be 3-1 already. I think they should have forfeited a game already, but the way the league's handling it. Who wins?
It's a fascinating topic because the Titans are just grinding out wins. There's only been 3 other teams in the Super Bowl era, which is since 1966, that have started 3-0 or better, but have yet to cover a game. So they're winning, but they're not covering. And it's pretty fun. And so the Bills game, this game's currently not on the board because you just don't know which players have tested positive. We don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, there's a chance it gets canceled. And to your point, maybe they get forfeited because of the rules violations. So it's fascinating, but no line right now. But the Bills are all of a sudden a high-scoring team. They've gone over in all 4 games. This was typically a team in the Sean McDermott era that had gone under, I think, the second most. So they're now all of a sudden scoring a bunch. Josh Allen is in the MVP conversation. I think he's the 4th lowest odds at Caesars William Hill. So I have to trust the Bills right now because they're getting it done both offensively and defensively.
That's interesting about not covering. Because really the betting line just represents, well, first the bookmaker, like the odds makers make the line. But what they're trying to predict is the number at which they get equal action on both sides, right? And then the wisdom of crowds moves the line based on the action. So the wisdom of crowds was a book written by James Surowiecki, by the way, which was an answer to the madness of crowds by I forgot who wrote the madness of crowds. But the idea is that all of us collectively, having some private information but also sharing some public information, are smarter than any one of us. The collective is smarter than the smartest member of the collective. And that's really what the betting line means, right? Because the public will start to bet it one way or another. That's the reason it's so tough to beat the spread, because you have to outwit all of us. So for a team to never cover means that what? That the crowd thinks they're better than they really are? Isn't that bizarre? The Titans?
Right, it's like a perception reality thing. Now, since 2000, early 2000s is when sort of like the math guys started infiltrating the betting market, kind of like the poker crowd, right?
Right.
Poker, early 2000s. So it's computer modeling. So in a way, it's like to your point, the wisdom of crowds and perception, it's kind of like a quantitative way to assess a qualitative sort of assessment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about perception with numbers. So it's the wisdom of the respected crowd, I guess, is the best way to put it. So, you know, now with technology in 2020, they flag accounts. They know which accounts are kind of respected players. So, you know, we laughed about it a couple of weeks ago where the Chiefs had, 98% of the money on the game against the Chargers. But, like, the respected money wasn't crazy, so they just kept the number in place. But if it's the respected money, that's when you'll see some line moves. and things like that. But you're right. Money. It's all collaboration. It's wisdom of crowds.
Yeah, smart money. Smart money's weighted more heavily. I get that. Raiders at the undefeated Chiefs. Kansas City's favored by 12. What do you think?
You know, it's funny. If I told you one of these teams has gone over in every game and one of these teams has gone under in every game, you'd think the Chiefs were the over team. But it's the Raiders who've gone over. And Kansas City, despite Mahomes and all the offense, have actually gone under in all four games because the defense is actually playing pretty well. It's kind of like the old Peyton Manning Colts days. They play well up, you know, downhill kind of thing. They protect leads. But
Doug cut out for a second. Doug, are you there? Doug, please don't hold it against the show that Raj misspelled your name.
Nope. On the screen. I think it was the wise guys got to it.
Oh, yeah, he mentioned about the computer modeling and stuff, and they can't have that.
Yeah.
They got rid of Doug.
Yeah. So I think this proves the point, though, you not being able to pronounce his name and getting guests mixed up.
There he is, Doug.
This gets the point to yesterday, but that's fine. We'll get back to
that.
Yeah, I apologize there. I am.
Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself for dropping your call. Doug, The Colts are 3-1. I think they're actually good. The Browns are 3-1, and I think they're actually talented, but they've benefited from a soft schedule. The Colts are at the Browns, and I think it's even odds, right? But we discussed this last week or 2 weeks ago. Is home field advantage still worth a field goal, or without crowds, is it less than a field goal? In other words, how much better do people think the Colts are than the Browns, in fact?
You know, it's a fascinating conversation. So I wrote a column entering the season. Basically, that whole three-point thing, that's more just like barroom and friends hanging out.
Right.
But even the perception of home field is not as drastic as it once was. Actually, last year, home teams performed the worst against the spread than they ever have in our database, which is Super Bowl era 1966. Basically, it's just travel has become easier on teams, the communication of the headsets with the crowds, and just they're tougher, they're more battle-tested. So I think just playing on the road is a lot not as difficult as it once was.
Hmm.
Now, so in terms of the value of the three, I mean, we've talked about it. Like, the three is so significant in betting. So a line from, like, a move from, like, 3 to 3.5, the casual person will think that's just a half point. But that is so much more significant than like 7.5 to like 9.5, which is 2 points, because of the key numbers in odds making in the NFL, 3 and 7. It's 15% of games in the last 5 years landed exactly 14.1%. So it's all about where it is. So in this case, with the Colts being 1 point favorites, probably on a neutral on a home, they'd probably be like a solid three at home. Now at Cleveland, it's tricky. We can't, you know, it's funny. People try to group the 0-16 Browns in those years when they were just terrible. It's so different than, like, this version of the Browns, the Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham. Last year, they were kind of bullies, beat up on bad teams, but they never did well against good teams. Like, they did win at Baltimore last year early in the season, but they always got beat by the good teams and then just beat up on, like, the Jets, the Bengals, and Dolphins, and things like that. So this will be a true test because last week was a nice win against the Cowboys. But this one will be an interesting test because they're 2-5 against the spread as an underdog going back to the beginning of last year. So the Beckham era. So when they are an underdog, they don't even do that well. That's actually the second worst cover percentage of the NFL as an underdog.
Doug Kazarian, or as Raj spells his name on my screen, Kazarian.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. It's time for news from Max Kellerman Nation. Just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. I'll take a call, then I'm going to give you my last take. Let's see. Brad in Long Island, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. Brad talking? Because if he is, I can't hear him. Go ahead, Brad.
Oh, can you hear me? I said, how are you, Max?
Good. How are you, Brad? Go ahead.
Good. I have a quick Whitey Ford story. I've been going there since about...
Before you begin, let me just mention to everyone, Whitey Ford, the greatest pitcher in the history of the New York Yankees, greatest starting pitcher, passed away today at 91 years old.
Correct.
He was one of the all-time great big game pitchers. The chairman of the board, the cocky 21-year-old, told Casey Stengel everything
he was... No, from Queens, actually. He lived in Jersey.
Told Casey Stengel, the manager, everything he was going to do, then went out and did it. Won World Series games at the age of 21, right. became the ace Correct. Of a great pitching staff, and passed away today, sadly. Was one of the all-time great big-game pitchers, a Cy right. Young winner, multiple six-time World Series winner. Right. Go ahead. What were you going to say, right. Brad?
Well, 16 years with the same team, died at 91, same as my grandpa's 91 at the same time, and I've been going there since 65. I actually saw Whitey pitch with my own eyes because I was born in 59, just about 58. So I saw Mickey at the end and Whitey. My dad used to take me all the time. I've been a lifelong Yankee fan. My father passed away about 12 years ago. A quick story, though. I worked at the Commodities Exchange when gold first hit $800, about 1982 or so. My silver broker was good friends with the actual man, Whitey. And he used to come down a lot, but then his son, you know, Eddie, and I heard he was named after Eddie Lopez, the great Yankee pitcher, not actually after his father. And he had a little problem with a certain substance. I believe he was a shortstop, just like his dad, who was told he was in the wrong position. That's why he became a pitcher. And Whitey's son, Eddie, actually worked, had to come there and work with me and my company, Floor Broker Associates, the futures world with us. We had the largest firm on the floor in the COMEX. And he had to be a phone clerk, just like the rest of us, because of those certain things he got involved in. I believe he's still around. And just I looked it up, and believe it or not, I think the last one left right now is Dr. Bobby Brown, who mm-hmm. played for the Yankees.
Listen, I got to cut you short because we have to get out of here in a few seconds. Let me just say, Whitey Ford is one of the all-time greats, the greatest Yankee starting pitcher of them all, had the consecutive scoreless innings streak in World Series. The World Series consecutive scoreless innings streak is like 33 innings, and I believe the record he beat was Babe Ruth's, and he was eventually passed, I want to say, by Hershiser in 88. Garrett Cole, they broke the bank to get Garrett Cole, $324 million over 9 years, for games like this, Game 5 tonight, the Yankees. And he needs to pull a Whitey Ford tonight and earn that money. Or it could all end for the Yankees tonight, also for the Lakers, who may be sitting on championship 17.